Okay. So, hello everyone. I'm Gábor Boskovics. I'm going to talk about name resolution in package managers from a reproducibility perspective. This is going to be rather practical and like side-by-side comparison of three prominent package managers, and it's not going to be so theoretical. I'll leave this to the next presenter. And yeah, just a few words about me. So as a day job, I work at Roche in the Roche Linux team. We are providing a Debian-based distribution for medical devices. I also work as a Gigs developer for roughly a decade now, which is a functional package manager. And yeah, as a hobby, I like astronomy and I like sailing. So let's get into it and see what we have. So let's first have like a few definitions cleared up. How I'm going to handle packages in this talk is that we are thinking about them as a triplet, the triplet of package name, a package version, and the actual data that is comprising this package. This is not always like 100% true. For example, you might end up in the unfortunate situation that the same name and version is actually designating multiple different packages. This is not so good. Yeah. Then what is reproducibility? Reproducibility is a property that when you are like building the same source, then you get the same binary. This is a pretty straightforward thing that we would like to achieve. It is like not always working like this. But why is this important? Why do we want to have this? That's because if you think about like the complexity of contemporary software, just by having a look at its binary representation, it is very hard to come to any conclusion about what it actually does. That's why we are preferring to work with them in source form. But then we would like to establish a correspondence that, okay, this binary is really corresponding to this source code. But now, with the current tooling that we have at our disposal, the only way to actually do this is to rebuild it from source and then see that we are coming up with the same result. Right now, going backwards does not work. Yeah, it works for like small stuff, but for typical software, it does not fly. So, yeah. When we are talking about reproducibility, we are talking about different layers of reproducibility. We can have like a layer on package level that, okay, this package is reproducible. If I build it from source, then I get the same package. We can also talk about this at different levels. For example, if we are talking about reproducibility as a system level, then what we expect is that from the same definition of the operating system, I got the, let's say, same set of files on the hard drive of that system. Yeah? And for this to happen, we actually have to pin the whole transitive dependency graph of the system image. Yeah? Because if there is like just one version mismatch anywhere, it is not going to be a reproducible system image anymore. Yeah. And why do we want to have name resolution in packaging systems? Is that we don't really want to encode this whole transitive dependency graph with all the versions for every package definition. Most probably, in the first place, we don't have enough information to do this. And then we would duplicate also like an immense amount of information. So we have to simplify somehow. And be able to express the dependencies in a way that we are referring to, like, not a complete triplet of the package, but we are, let's say we are just picking the name or the name and the version or something like a smaller piece of information to identify this package. Yeah? We would like to essentially have something like this, that we have a package called name, and this depends on this and this and this package name. Yeah? And also, because we want to be reproducible, we want to have this process to be deterministic. Yeah? In most cases, this is not deterministic. There are a few approaches that are taken. But usually it involves like creating a candidate set of packages that we can resolve the dependency to, and then somehow selecting one from them. Usually, let's say the latest version. Yeah, but then this latest version might depend, for example, on when the package repository update was run the last time on the system and these kind of things. And this is not really acceptable if you want to have a reproducible build of the system. So somehow you have to circumvent this thing. Yeah, and the other thing is that we don't want to author all the packages that are like existing in the world, because that would be like super annoying. We want to share them somehow. Yeah, so we want to have a place where we share that, okay, this software can be packaged like this, and from this package definition, you can somehow build it, or you have a binary that you can download that is going to correspond to that particular piece of software, and you can install it on your system. Yeah. So we are having like repositories, which is like called in a different way by every package manager, I think, that exists. We already had this, that for example in Rust we are calling these, the packages we are calling crates, and the repositories we are calling registries. But these are conceptually the same thing. Yeah. Okay, so right now what we are going to look at is how we are defining this process. First, we have like a bunch of configuration that is like the active configuration of the package manager. One piece of this information is which of these repositories are used. Yeah, so where I'm sourcing the package definitions from. And this is like common piece of information. It is done very similarly in each package manager. You have usually one or more configuration files with information like this. This is an example for a Debian source definition. Here is an example for Cargo, how you define a registry there. This is an example in Geek, how you define a channel there. Yeah, and then all of these repositories have some kind of underlying data structure. So here in Rust Cargo, I'm pretty sure that there are a bunch of people who is like much more knowledgeable than I am, because Cargo I'm using only as a user. This is roughly what I know about it, that you are pointing your URL there, and that's more or less the information you pass there. In Debian, there I know a bit more about this. I would say that I'm a power user. So here you have this sign by stanza, which is basically pointing to a GPG key. And then in the Debian repository, you actually have a release file, which is signed by this key, and it is containing an integrity database of the actual state of the repository. Yeah. And in Geeks, what we have is actually each of these channels are Git repositories. And then basically, there we are reusing the security model of the underlying Git repository. When we are accessing it, we have, of course, the option to have like TLS. And then in the content of the Git repository, we have the Git commit signing and all these additional security properties that Git gives us. Yeah, and what is interesting about this is that when you are thinking about this, then the Cargo and the Debian registries are like not really having their full history at your disposal. Yeah. On the other hand, what Git channels do, because they are Git repositories, they have the full history available. So that means that basically you can time travel backwards and forwards along a channel definition. And then you can have, let's say, a package from like 5 years ago pretty easily pulled in. Yep. And also, what this means there is it's pretty easy to actually pin down the whole repo state. Because you just notify which channels are in use, and you write up like the Git commits that they are at, and then you have a full, fully reproducible repository state. And in the other cases, you have to actually resort to some kind of ancillary information to do this. Yeah, and then how does a package definition look like? Because this is also important from the reproducibility perspective. So let's have a look at how Debian does this. Debian packages are like defined by quite a few files. The control file is basically giving you like the name of the package, and it also tells you its dependencies. Yeah? And then you also have the changelog. The changelog is essentially telling you the version of the package, more or less. Yeah? And then you have basically the rules as the build information, the source format, because Debian is able to like build packages in different ways based on the structure of the actual package definition on the Debian side. And this is roughly building up a package. Yeah, so most of this code are snippets. They are not full definitions. They are just the parts that are like important from this perspective. Then, sorry. So, yeah, so in Rust, you do something like this. This is in a single file. And then you have the name and the version, and then the dependencies. So this format is like way more compact. And here in the dependencies, you actually have a bit of leniency. You can say that it's like bigger than this, smaller than that, whatsoever. Yeah, so you can have like a specification of the versions that are allowed for the resolution. In this form, it is actually tying the versions, but you can have like more info here. And then this is how it looks in Geeks. What you see here is that the package name is basically duplicated. So the name of the package, after this name stanza, is what you are referring to the package as on the command line. And the top one is actually it's defining a variable, and this is how you are referring to the package in the API. And then in the inputs, this name that you have there is corresponding to these variables. And then the name resolution in Geeks is basically the resolution of the variable binding in the underlying programming language. That means that when you put this inputs list geoc, then you already pin the version to the exact one, like a very similar definition to this one. And this is always like fully pinned. There is literally no way to express anything besides this binding construct. That means that this structure is completely reproducible from the state of the repository. Yeah, so a few observations. Debian packaging requires quite a bit of work. I think everyone who ever did this knows that this is not like trivial feat. It can be done pretty quickly, but yeah, it can be a complicated beast. Yeah, and in Gigs packages, basically this is what I told about, is that the variable bindings resolution is already giving you a full graph of tight dependencies. Then, there is usually a last step, which is missing from Gigs, is that once you have the candidates, how you actually find out which ones to manifest on the system. So normally in Debian-based system, you are manifesting the latest version that is available in all the repositories for the given package, except if you are having a conflict or if you are defining pinning. So that means that if you pin everything in a Debian system, you get a reproducible build. Then you have like one of these pin definitions for each and every package on your system. This is perfectly doable, but it's pretty inconvenient. Then in Cargo, we are creating a log file. This is like a pretty typical thing. Bunch of other package managers are doing this thing. That basically when you are building, it is like resolving the dependencies, drops that into a file for you, and then that file is like taking precedence for the future builds until you say that you want to update it. This is giving you like a reproducible set of sources to build from. Yeah. And in Gigs, we already resolve basically at definition time by this trick that we are actually putting the fully fledged package objects into the graph. Yeah. Then, next thing is that when we have these repositories, then there are a few problems to think about. So sometimes the repository state is affecting your build. You can work around this in all of the systems. It is like pretty much dependent on how convenient to work around this if you want to have a reproducible build. And then the other thing is that the user or the client side of the thing is not having control over this state. Yeah? So if you gain control over this state, then there is no problem. But usually this is not the case. You cannot tell, let's say, the Debian people that, well, please don't publish to Trixie anymore. This just does not fly. Yeah? And then there are a bit of problems also with the log file-based things. The biggest problem there is that you are not like required to publish your log file. And then there is like very hard to figure out, for example, what your test suite was run against. Yeah? Because it gets detached. You cannot like reproduce the same thing because you are missing this information. Yeah, so one way to improve here is to encourage committing the log files into the source control. Then there is a third thing. This is affecting all the systems. sometimes the like upstream just goes away. And then you don't have a way to rebuild it anymore. Yeah, so what is the benefit that is like provided by having a centrally managed repository? Is that the repository managers can enforce certain properties. So this is, for example, where crazy.io can shine. Yeah, because they can say that, okay, let's say we are not allowing to remove stuff, or we are not allowing to push a different binary corresponding to the same name and version, and these things. And if this is like centralized, then this is giving you the possibility to do this. And then the situation is way better than like on the Wild West, where everyone is pushing everything into the repository. Yeah, but this still requires some coordination. Yeah. So approaches that can be done when there is no central management is basically twofold. Either you take over the repository to your side and define its state completely, which is one approach that is like typically applied. And then the other one is that you can add additional configuration information to always resolve to the same name, let's say pinning. Yeah, but this is usually like a lot of work, and then it does not really mitigate against this package removal problem. Yeah, actually taking over the repository does, because there you just say it, you don't remove it, and that's it. Yeah. And then in functional package managers, what we have instead is that this is like completely tied the repository state. It is always attachable to the actual build. So you can have a provisioning file that is like telling you that it was built by having the package manager pointing to these commits on these channels, and that's it. And then we also do in Geeks something very interesting about the removal of the upstreams, because there we are still relying on the source at least. There are like a bunch of systems, for example, Software Heritage is allowing you to send the source code to them, and then they are archiving it. And if all the upstream URLs are going down, Software Heritage still have a copy from which you can build. Yeah, and also basically in these functional package managers, the binary packages are just a cache. There is a promise, let's say, that you can build the exact same thing from source if you want. But we are providing in our build infrastructure something that we built ourselves. Feel free to check it. Otherwise, you can add our signature and then trust the binaries that we built for you. Yeah. So packaging effort. So usually for language package managers, it's relatively low. They are made to be frictionless with that particular programming language. Yeah, but there are two things here. One of them is the diamond problem, when you are having like two packages depending on the conflicting versions of something that is like a single package. This is a tricky one. And then it can result in all kind of interesting situations. You can avoid this, for example, by running the whole thing in a container. Then they are not touching each other, and then we are happy. Yeah, and then there is the infrastructure problem with language-specific package managers, which means that basically the things that you built are still depending on the actual versions of the toolchain whatsoever, that is like not defined in the package definition. And yeah, Basically, here you want to have an isolation. And then the effort is usually like you create the metadata, build instructions, and then you test the package, and then you can release it. It's very similar to functional package managers. And then there is a maintenance effort which goes into like how hard it is to update this. Yeah. And once we have like all of this, then we are ending up with like some interesting data, like how well this thing actually works. And what we get is that now we are having like 95% of reproducibility for almost everything, which is really nice. There is one missing point, which is really bad as of now, is that most of the time we are going to build from release tables on the distribution level. And then the creation of the release table from the source is usually not reproducible. This is something that we want to address in the near future. And then my key point about the whole thing is if we make this simple for everyone, then everyone is willing to have reproducibility. So let's go here and try to make reproducible builds easy. Any questions? Yeah, so it doesn't look to be the case. Thank you very much.
Thank you.